Series Zero SCPs. The SCP universe has expanded beyond anyone's reasonable expectations since it was first formed out of a 4chan post back in 2007. Thousands of articles, numerous canons, entire arcs of lore and backstory combining multiple anomalies in stories akin to full novels. What would happen, however, if there was only that original post to go off of? Just SCP-173 and its vagaries. That's what Series Zero attempts to tackle. A series of articles that abandon all of the pre-existing bits of lore connected to the SCP universe and pretend that the only thing they have to go off of is SCP-173. Instead of the Foundation, it features the Special Collections Program, an organization operating within the US military, and they're possibly the only organization in the world looking into the anomalous, generally to help out the military in some way. It's loose, weird, and definitely different. Let's take a look. Let's start with SCP-9853, with the object class of Pythagoras. The containment procedures note that hazardous materials specialists are to retrieve 9853's refuse, which is collected in a small metal basin beneath the object, once every 24 hours. Full body coverings are necessary for handling 9853's discharges. All waste products obtained from 9853 are held within individual containers within the Greater Operations Armory until authorized for use in the field. Instances older than 3 months are destroyed via incinerator. As for what it is, it's a two-piece fleece and wool costume designed to resemble a yellow furred Easter Bunny character. The object's hollow interior is occupied by a mass of plaster, allowing it to maintain form. Once every 24 hours, it produces a firm, oval-shaped white mass from a hole located within the object's mouth. While the outermost layer of these objects is chemically comparable to rubber, testing has revealed a plaster interior, similar to the costume's interior. Despite this, these objects possess an intensely odorous, sulfitic smell. Physical contact with one of these objects will induce an alteration in a person's active perception. Upon contact, they will gain spatial, visual, and tactile awareness of the costume and its surrounding area, regardless of their actual distance from the costume. These sensations overlap with the person's existing, natural perceptions of their own environment, creating a simultaneous sensory experience. Sleep, sedation, and other losses of consciousness do not terminate the cognizance of 9853 and its locality. This effect will persist until the person wholly consumes the waste it has touched. 9853 has been authorized for containment within Enhanced Interrogation Chamber 4, located at Site Black. The chamber has been outfitted with a few features. A floodlight system serving as a pseudo-ceiling, operating at an intensity of 140 lumens per watt. A series of 6 high-intensity volume amplifiers, installed within each of the chamber's walls and ceilings. A floor and wall pattern of jagged pieces of raised metal, and a piping system designed to keep the chamber flooded with a minimum of 6 centimeters of water kept at a temperature of 15 degrees Celsius, or 59 degrees Fahrenheit, or below. At present, 64 detainees are simultaneously held within 9853's perceptual radius. So, it's an Easter Bunny costume that spits out a weird egg. Anyone that touches one becomes able to see and feel as if they were the costume, which doesn't stop until they eat the egg. We don't really know what happens when they do that, but the containment procedures mention that they're using these eggs in the field, and instances older than 3 months are incinerated. The costume's containment chamber is outfitted more as a torture chamber, not for the costume, of course, but for whomever is currently experiencing sensations from the costume's perspective. Delightful. Next, we have SCP-9508, object class Xeno. It's the pit at Open Mouth Barbecue, a barbecue restaurant in Dripping Springs, Texas. Prior to containment, the restaurant was held in high regard by the local population. Its proprietorship changed on several occasions during its 41-year lifespan, but none of the owners appear to have been aware of the anomaly. Anyone who cooks food in the pit will experience physical sensations when the food is eaten by another person. The nature and intensity of these sensations vary substantially between tests. Consumers will not have any unexpected sensations when eating the food. We're given a partial list of testing data, starting with a cook named Woodward who cooked ribs that were eaten by a man named Yates. Woodward was able to discern, even from a different room, when exactly Yates took each bite of ribs. Woodward described the chewing sensation as intense, but not painful or unpleasant, pinching in his chest. Food being swallowed corresponded to a slimy feeling in various places on his torso. After finishing the ribs, Yates licked some leftover barbecue sauce off of a bone, and although Woodward was able to identify this behavior, he was unwilling to describe the sensation in detail. Woodward requested a break from testing following this, citing emotional disquiet, while Yates reported no unusual experiences during the meal and described the food as good. In another test, a cook named Smock prepared beef brisket and chicken for two people. He reported two sets of sensations corresponding to chewing, one inside the mouth described as being pecked by birds, the other in the hands described as petting a cat that's been laying in the sun. Both were considered pleasant. Smock was not made aware of swallowing, but could tell when they licked their lips or wiped their face with a napkin. This sensation was described as polishing the inside of his eyeballs, and was also considered pleasant. Partway through the test, the two exchanged small portions of their respective meals. Smock experienced a fit of giggles when this occurred, but could not account for it after regaining composure. Notably, Smock described the two as the sisters during testing, despite having no contact with either of them prior to the test, and despite the women not being related. The two reported greatly enjoying their meals and were unable to shed light on Smock's misconception. A cook named Pope prepared a pulled pork sandwich for a man named Nelson. When Nelson bit into the pulled pork itself, Pope experienced the sensation of being bitten on a seemingly random part of the body. Swallowing resulted in the feeling of being compressed from all sides, as though being forced headfirst through a narrow, lubricated tube. Partway through the meal, Nelson began dipping the sandwich in mustard. Whenever this occurred, Pope experienced it as a prolonged, intense pain in the scalp, as though the hair was being pulled back. After the conclusion, Pope was visibly shaken and asked to meet the person who ate the sandwich. He also proactively volunteered for future experiments. Nelson reported not liking the sandwich, but stated that dipping it in mustard made it tolerable. Lastly, authorization was granted to use the barbecue for Research Team 13's Independence Day celebration, consisting of 10 personnel. Dr. Villarreal volunteered to prepare the meat for the event, with the stipulation that he be allowed to eat his own meal first to avoid being distracted by the anomaly's effects. He experienced no effect from eating his own food, and so the meat was distributed to the rest of the team. Shortly after the staff began eating, Villarreal started shaking and laid on the floor of the observation room, where he remained until well after the conclusion of the meal. During this time, he vocalized erratically and incoherently, but did not appear distressed. Further details have been withheld for the sake of decorum. Once he regained his composure, he described the experience as a comprehensive sensory overload, with a variety of overlapping physical stimuli that he found difficult to classify or distinguish between. This was accompanied with a variety of strong emotions that he was similarly unable to adequately characterize, as well as various insight into his co-workers that may or may not be grounded in reality. While staff greatly appreciated his cooking and his volunteering for the assignment, Villarreal had to be reassigned following various instances of overly familiar behavior towards his teammates over the next week. He remains in good standing with the organization. So, a pretty intimate experience for the cook, while also being really odd. Shame they didn't test pastrami, the most sensual of all the salted cured meats. Next, we have SCP-8751. A single-story house in Los Gatos, California, purchased by Gilbert Burton on March 3, 1942, following his marriage to Judith Burton. The Special Collections Program became aware of its anomalous properties and acquired it shortly thereafter. It appears to be host to an 18-hour closed system loop, preventing direct interaction with its inhabitants. Though the result of each iteration of the loop is always the same, the preceding events differ each time. Loops within the house begin with Gilbert relaxing while Judith attends to various household chores. Judith sporadically attempts to make small talk with Gilbert to little success. At some point, Gilbert will accidentally become fatally injured to Judith's distress. Typically, Gilbert expires via asphyxiation from aspirating food or blunt force trauma from a fall. But sharp force fatalities, drownings, and immolations have also been observed. After confirming that Gilbert is dead, Judith will drag his body to the basement door, shoving it down the steps. From that point on, Judith spends the rest of the iteration alternating between housework and staring out of the living room window. Gilbert reappears in an unoccupied room at the beginning of the next loop, with no apparent memory of what previously occurred. Investigation of the surrounding domiciles has not uncovered any additional anomalous activity. No other houses in the area were found to possess a basement. Unsettling domestic bliss raises a lot of questions without answering any of them. Why did this house have a basement when none of the others do? Why does she shove the body down into the basement? Why does she act distressed at first, but then seems to not care? Why does it imply that Gilbert doesn't seem to remember anything, but doesn't state anything about Judith? I'd say that this is classic Series 1 material, except that it shows a degree of sophistication that I think a lot of Series 1 doesn't. Next, we have SCP-9082, Object Class Hypatia. It was discovered in 2002, although its origin is as of yet unknown. It is a website, accessible at the domain www.redroom.live, which hosts numerous live streams and text-based forums. Just as an aside, to save you some trouble, while that site does exist, it's currently an open-source geopolitical intelligence platform. The live streams on the site consist entirely of static shots of interiors, including basements, classrooms, bathrooms, kitchens, church halls, and bedrooms. Despite their well-kept appearance, these rooms have never been seen occupied by a living human. A small community of unidentified individuals is active on the site, frequently discussing the contents of the live streams and related topics on the site's forums and live chats. When accessing a live stream, the viewer is capable of transferring their consciousness into the room depicted by using their blood to paint a circular pattern on their computer screen. This may only work when the subject is within a dark room. Personnel report immediately falling asleep and awakening within the room depicted. They are capable of moving through the space, described as floating or gliding, but are unable to access areas not in view of the camera. The space, which would be directly behind the camera, is replaced by a concave white void, tapering off from the existing walls and ending in a rounded oblong point. Within 4 to 8 hours, personnel's consciousness will return to their body, and they will awaken. The sensation of being in a room has been described as intensely euphoric. For the duration of the event, the cadaver of the affected individual will appear motionless within the livestream feed of the room. Users often encourage others to engage in this act, expressing a great deal of pleasure within the stream's live chat when users' corpses appear on screen. Multiple cadavers can appear in a stream at one time, with no known limit. This is seen as a communal activity for users. Certain rooms featured on the site have been successfully identified, although live streams do not seem to actually occur from these locations. Entering these spaces does not register any change within related live streams, nor has any recording equipment ever been discovered. All identified rooms have been previous locations of homicides, a fact seemingly known by users, whose handles and forum messages sometimes reference the circumstances of certain murders or the names of victims. Personnel are not advised to engage with users, and only white class personnel and above may use the site for recreational purposes. In internet folklore, a red room is a site in which victims are tortured or murdered on stream for an audience. What we have here is a ritual in which someone can shed their own blood to be a part of the red room, in a room that featured an actual homicide. The program has apparently been unable to actually remove the site from the internet completely, and have decided that it's alright if some of their personnel use it for fun themselves. Moving on, we have SCP-9073, object class Hypatia. It's an anomalous humanoid that appears outside of a small percentage of houses in the US that meet certain conditions. These conditions include it being only inhabited by a single child, between 6 and 12 years old, it being past 10 p.m., it being dark outside, and the child not being asleep. The entity will walk up to the house's front door and repeatedly knock and/or ring the doorbell, requesting to be let in the house. Camera footage of the entity appears to show a tall man wreathed in shadow. Its voice and appearance have been universally referred to as unpleasant and disquieting. It will continue knocking for 5 to 10 minutes, and should the child not open the door, it will slip 2 full-size Hershey's brand chocolate bars under the door. They're right, that is unpleasant. Should the child consume the candy or open the door at any point, the entity will grab the child and teleport along with it to an unknown location. From here, the experience of the subject varies, though they will invariably be teleported back to their own bedroom, asleep, 2 hours later. The entity has not been noted to appear to the same subject twice. We're given a short collection of manifestations, starting with Jeremy Fish, age 9. Fish stated that the entity took him to a big and old house, where all the lights were broken, and then chased him while holding a needle and buttons. The sound of its running was described as similar to that of a dog on all fours, and he repeatedly stated that it could climb the walls. At one point, the entity grabbed him and forced him to look at it before taking off a mask, revealing a rotting, feminine face, and releasing him. Fish's parents stated that they had taken the boy to see the film Coraline recently, and that he had been having nightmares about it, believing that the entity's manifestation was simply one of these dreams. In addition, the removal of a mask was noted as similar to a scene from The Witches by Roald Dahl. Amy Ruttenberg, age 7, had eaten one of the chocolate bars provided, and the entity transported her to a hospital room where she vomited into a bucket for at least half an hour while the entity laughed at her, forcing her to eat both chocolate bars once she was finished vomiting. She stated that it hurt worse than any tummy ache, and that she continued vomiting intermittently until finally the entity patted her on the head. This caused the cessation of all symptoms. It's noted that Ruttenberg has developed an aversion to chocolate and other candies, though her liking for lettuce and other vegetables has increased dramatically. Lastly, Billy Mink, age 8, repeatedly noted that the entity had a voice and appearance similar to his father's, stating that he opened the door immediately due to being scared of a hiding. The entity transported Mink to a space similar to an implausibly large walk-in closet, chasing him with a big hook on a stick, attempting to grab him by the pants and bring him to it. Mink stated that he hid behind a stack of blue dresses until the manifestation ended. After hearing this story, Mink's mother immediately filed for divorce and moved in with a close friend, taking her son with her. On March 4th, 2010, Dr. Philip Perez conducted an experiment involving 9073. By building a substructure beneath a home, yet one that could easily access the front door, he hoped to determine what would happen if an adult opened the door for the entity. The experiment was successful following 2 months of trial. When Dr. Perez opened the door, the entity showed signs of extreme confusion and annoyance before grabbing Perez and disappearing with him. Perez reappeared in his home 10 hours later, unconscious, bleeding from multiple small bite wounds, and in a state of extreme traumatic shock. Though he recovered following therapeutic treatment, he has refused to comment on what the entity did to him. All testing of this nature has been canceled until further notice. The containment procedures state that since the anomaly universally affects children, who are easily suggestible and will often assume that the entity was some manner of nightmare, containing it is not of great concern. So it seems like the entity is sort of out to help these kids in some way. It helped the one girl potentially avoid a lifetime of eating Hershey's chocolate, and helped Billy get out of an abusive household. I guess it's sort of like a kid's version of Jigsaw from the Saw films. I'm sure you expected far worse stuff heading into this one. Next, we have SCP-8546, Object Class Diogenes. In 2006, a hiker discovered the corpse of an elderly woman, partially buried under fallen rocks, on a remote hiking trail near Canmore, Alberta. Upon approaching, he was attacked by what he described as a feral dog, and fled, with the dog not pursuing. The bite mark on the victim's leg, however, did not match dentation of any known animal. SCP-8546 was found in the vicinity of the corpse shortly after the incident, and was moved to Site-19. At time of containment, 8546 visually resembled a small, domestic dog, but its physical strength and speed was much higher than would be expected of such. Its biting force was estimated to be at 700 kilograms. Its movements are described as unnaturally smooth, and there was a large rip in the skin of its right upper hind leg, exposing bare muscle. The injury didn't bleed and showed no signs of healing, but the creature didn't limp. The entity's teeth were made of carved bone, coated with an unknown resin. One eye was made of tinted glass, although it still appeared capable of sight. The other eye was shattered shortly after recovery. Fragments of glass remained embedded in the empty socket, which also did not bleed. The object was originally discovered wearing an embroidered leather collar, but this was discarded. The creature feeds strictly on animal meat, but it appears to lack a true digestive tract, as it doesn't defecate, but rather vomits a slurry of waste material 1 to 3 hours after feeding. So it's basically my cat. It also doesn't respire. DNA tests indicate that its tissue is a mix of domestic dog, Homo sapiens, and an unknown species of arthropod. No nerve tissue has been discovered, and the creature is not considered to be sentient. The mechanism of its animation is as of yet unknown. A number of changes to its condition have occurred since containment, though. Its teeth were lost or destroyed at some point, likely due to wear and tear while feeding. This was not discovered for at least 2 weeks, during which it was unable to effectively feed. During this period of fasting, it began to continuously secrete an acrid-smelling, mildly caustic white sludge from exposed areas of flesh. Production of this secretion slowed, but did not stop upon switching to liquefied feed. It eventually began to tear out patches of its own fur and pull on edges of its torn skin. This, in conjunction with skin incidentally removed when cleaning the creature with pressurized water, eventually led to its current condition, where only small patches of skin and fur are present. This is not considered an issue for containment. It recently began to attempt to force its body through the 2-centimeter gaps between its cage's bars whenever personnel are nearby. Initially, this was unsuccessful and led to the loss of its remaining eye, but it eventually successfully forced its entire head and one foreleg through the gap, injuring a member of cleaning personnel in the process. The cage was subsequently electrified to prevent further incidents. During that incident, it was discovered to be capable of regenerating lost appendages with minimal ill effects, including its head. Severed tissue remains partially animate after removal. Regular harvesting of tissue samples for research purposes was authorized. The repeated loss of appendages accompanied by electrical shocks has gradually disrupted its physical form. Currently, only the rear half of the creature resembles a dog. The front half now more closely resembles a very large, skinless tongue with a round feeding hole on the tip. Despite these changes, personnel continue to describe its loud, continuous barking as extremely dog-like. It's definitely unsettling, as this dog creature has been through quite a lot, and at a certain point it seems more humane for them to just toss it into the incinerator. It helps, I suppose, that it doesn't have any nerve tissue, so one must imagine the horrific canine anomaly is all right with it all. Let's close out with SCP-9308, another Hypatia class. It's a television program broadcast, discovered in 1999 in the town of Roger, Wisconsin, airing on their public access network. Titled Professor Piggy's Playhouse, it aired weekly at 4 a.m. between an unknown date and November of 2003. There are 62 known episodes, with many more thought to be lost. Each episode opens with an unidentified male wearing a rubber pig mask and formal clothing sitting in front of a fireplace and reading a book. He identifies himself as the titular Professor Piggy before introducing the episode's educational topic, such as algebra or Marxism-Leninism. He will give a rudimentary, often incorrect introduction to the topic at hand before abruptly cutting to the bulk of the episode. A recording of the game Kick the Can follows, shot in one unbroken take from the cameraman's POV, who plays the role of it. They proceed to chase a group of 8 to 10 individuals throughout a dark, enclosed subterranean location. Players, stripped down to their underwear, attempt to evade capture. If caught, they are spontaneously transported to Piggy Jail, a small section of the lair enclosed by metal bars. Adjacent to the jail is a Budweiser brand beer can filled with small stones and screws. Should a free player manage to kick over the can, all jailed players will be freed, as the bars automatically rise into the ceiling via unknown means. Footage shows the location to be in an advanced state of disrepair, with some rooms being partially flooded. It, the cameraman, has won every game recorded. The moment they make contact with the last remaining player, there is a cut to a similar point-of-view shot of the cameraman spraying the jailed players with an unidentified liquid from a hose pipe. Loud oinking can be heard from behind the camera. This lasts for approximately 3 minutes before abruptly returning to the opening set piece of Professor Piggy addressing the audience in front of a fireplace. The episode will conclude with the host erroneously claiming that the viewer now knows everything they need to know about the episode's apparent topic. The end credits are scored by the song As Long As We Got Each Other by BJ Thomas and Dusty Springfield. They include the full legal names of all players featured in the episode, as well as a multitude of names thought to be fake, with far more people credited than necessary for the program's content. Professor Piggy is credited as playing himself. Roger Public Access 9 administrators claim no knowledge as to how 9308 aired on their network, with broadcasting being attributed to an unknown form of hijacking. The majority of individuals who appeared in 9308 have been identified, with all being residents of Roger, Wisconsin. Most report experiencing nightmares involving the Professor Piggy character around the time their respective episode aired, but deny actually encountering him. Due to the relatively small population of Roger, around 1,000, it is thought that every current resident above the age of 4 has appeared in the show at least once. The latest episode of the show to date aired on the 1st of November, 2003. This is the only known episode to deviate from the show's typical format, consisting entirely of footage from previous Kick the Can games. 4 days later, a previously unknown subterranean level was found beneath the town's Blue Creek Elementary School. Visuals matched the area shown in the Kick the Can segment, although the fireplace room could not be found. The space was bare except for a VHS tape containing the final episode of the show, labeled Best Of, 3 empty Budweiser brand beer cans, an empty tripod bag, and a handwritten note written in Pig Latin. When translated, it read, "Moving town. Roger, thanks for the memories." At time of writing, no new episodes of the show have been broadcast for 8 months. Roger Public Access 9 has been told to contact Special Containment Program liaisons should any further hijackings occur. Public access networks in neighboring towns have also been given the same guidance. So what could have very well been just another weird Max Headroom-style broadcast hack ended up anomalous due to it appearing to be that all of the residents of the town unknowingly get chased around a basement and hosed down at night. Professor Piggy then packed things up and is going to move around to the next town to do it all again. Honestly, I could see a show like that airing on Adult Swim and not thinking much of it. It's no secret that I'm a big fan of the way the SCP universe has developed over the years, seeing as how it's a pretty core aspect of my life at this point. I love the numerous canons, groups of interest, massive articles of novella length that intertwine multiple anomalies and characters and so on. That being said, there is a beauty in the mysteriousness and simplicity of the very start of SCP, when we didn't have any preconceived notions of what an SCP could or should be. Everything was unknown and unsettling, with many people even glancing at these articles and thinking that they might be real. Series Zero, much like Classic Con, is a bit of a breath of fresh air. Nostalgic, without being familiar.